the premiere of the streaming Cyboctacular was a smash hit!
Yeah!
Woo!
Woo!
The reviews are in. The friends of DeSoto. They love this live show.
And this thing is going to be available to stream until midnight on May 30th. That's the rest of the month, so get a ticket and watch it tonight, why don't you?
There's exclusive merch at this show that we didn't have available on tour.
And if you already support us on MaximumFun.org, you'll get a discount for your ticket. Check your email for a promo code.
The ticket link is at greatestgentour.com. Go check out the show, watch it with someone you love, and share your embarrassment with them.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the U.S.
Commander Benjamin Sisko, the Federation Starbase, Deep Space Nine.
Welcome to the Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine. Star Trek podcast by two guys who are, as ever, a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm also still embarrassed. I'm Ben Harrison. I didn't tell you this, but I saw the host of another Maximum Fun show on the street the other day.
Oh, no. And do other Max Fun hosts even regard us in the streets, in these streets?
Yeah, like I thought about walking up and introducing myself, and then I was like, nah, I don't want to, because I don't want him to maybe be like, no, you're not a peer.
Hal Lublin, famously an asshole, would have just taken you down to street level had you approached him.
Hal Lublin was such a nice guy when we met him.
I completely agree. I want to party with him again.
I know.
He's the best.
Yeah, we totally bumped into Hal Lublin at a house party, and it was like, whoa, this house party is dope.
I immediately fell in love with him because we got into a super deep wrestling conversation, like, right away. It was awesome.
Yeah, I just faded into the background at that point.
Thing is, I want to be on Tights and Fights, but that show maybe more than any other really intimidates me. The idea of being on it. I have a very shallow level of wrestling knowledge that basically ended in, I think, 2003.
Mm-hmm.
I'm afraid all my references would be too dated for them.
Yeah, you'd just be making the D-Generation X crotch thrust the entire time, and they'd be like, Adam, please.
That's not a thing anymore. Yeah. You know me, always making the D-Generation X crotch thing.
Yeah, that's your, like, when you come out on stage at our live shows, you always do that, right?
It's kind of my move.
Yeah.
Also, my move is a figure four leg lock that I put you in on stage until you submit.
Yeah.
Very painful.
Yeah, yeah. Adam, this episode, I believe, is going to come out within the same week as the debut of Friendly Fire.
Oh boy.
We've probably announced this elsewhere, but is it worth announcing what the first movie we're going to watch for Friendly Fire is?
I mean, let's go ahead and announce it.
Okay.
If it's redundant, then whatever.
Yeah.
People need to know this stuff.
Then hey, fuck us, right? We're going to watch the movie Saving Private Ryan. That will be the exciting and fun-filled film with which we launch our war movie watching project. A film that maybe more than anything makes us confront what a poor idea the whole project is.
Now, I think the movie that will do that is Schindler's List in episode 2.
I don't think that's going to be episode 2. I'm going out on a limb.
Yeah, let the record show episode 2 is not Schindler's List.
I think
we're saving that for a live show, right?
Right. Nothing puts asses in seats like a grim depiction of one of the most unspeakable acts of cruelty ever visited on humans by other humans.
I believe that was a part of Leonard Maltin's review, was nothing puts asses in seats like Schindler's List.
Is it the same Schindler that makes the elevators?
I don't know.
Because I get in an elevator sometimes.
I thought that was Tyson Crope, Tyson Coep or something.
Oh, I don't know what that is.
Ben, I used to, in high school, I took a foreign language class. That language was German.
Really? It was, you were it was one a class, of those?
It was a class in which you were given something called culture credit. Culture credit was a point system reward in which you earned credits based on German cultural experiences that you would have. So,
so if you could prove that you had a Landjäger in your pocket to the...
Yeah. The preparation or consumption of German food was a qualification for getting a point.
Yeah.
Watching a movie with German subtitles, also a way to get points.
Like
Ben,
watching like Lethal Weapon 2 with German subtitles was a creditable action?
It was indeed.
What?
Yeah. Yeah.
When I was in a French class in high school, I made a video called Croissant avec Benjamin. And I, it was like a cooking show that I did in
you
broken
such
French.
An idiot. Like if I had to guess the name of a film that you made as a student, that would have come pretty close.
Yeah.
As a title,
it would have been in your top 10 guesses.
Yeah, I would have gotten there in less than 10.
I still have a tape of that somewhere, and it's like the telltale heart. It's like beating in a box in my office, and I'm always conscious of it. No matter where I am in the world, I'm conscious of it being there.
Well, next time I visit, I hope to see it.
Yeah, fortunately, it's on a now defunct format, so it'd be pretty hard to dig it out.
Well, to finish my anecdote. No one has ever said that they watched Schindler's List more than the students of this class, who basically used it for points, like bi-weekly. Like, yep, watched Schindler's List again, give me another culture credit point. And really, like, a teacher is going to be reticent to press a student on on their proof of repeated watchings of that movie. Because, like, it's so sad. Like, what did you get this time out of it is just a way to ruin the rest of your day. So, it's like, you just say that you watched that movie, you
oh,
get
man.
The check off of the point, and then that would be that. A real conversation ender
this
for
is,
culture credit.
This is precisely the kind of thing that led to Trump being elected.
It's, look, it was an unfair system. The system was the problem, Ben. The system, which asked students to do these very flimsy culture credit tasks, wasn't right. And so
Oskar
we took advantage.
Schindler lied to the government repeatedly about how many Jews he had. He's a motherfucker. Frau Uvelent was a terrible teacher. Completely subjective in her grading of the students.
Seriously, one of the worst teachers I ever had. And I'm not going to bleep out her name. Actually, I should bleep out her name. That's not cool. Ben, you and I just telling stories for the show, using our Marin Open. That's what the Marin Open's for, right? Doing
wasting everybody's time.
Much like the title of the episode to come, Ben, season 1, episode 13 of Deep Space Nine. 13 episodes in already.
Lucky 13.
Episode today is The Storyteller.
Do you realize how incredible this is? No, of course you don't.
We start with the reveal that the... this is going to come as a major disappointment to you, Adam. But the Pakut and the Navat are having a disagreement, and so
who's going to mediate that?
Obviously, Ben Sisko.
The Pakut and the Navat are having a big disagreement, but one Bajoran station commander is caught right in the middle.
What they should have done is start this episode with the cold open of Sisko attempting to mediate a peace between the two factions in the last episode and it devolving into a knife fight. And then, like, this is his shot to, like, get back on top as a diplomat. Like, this is a redemption story, guys. That's what this episode needed, was like anything at all.
I was hoping for like the glimpse at Cisco's dark past with a, back on my planet, we used to solve disputes this way, and he like breaks a pool cue over his knee, sets it in the middle of the room. I don't expect you to kill a 15-year-old girl, but if you want those river rights, you'll do what you have to do.
The other thing that's going on in the cold open is O'Brien is desperately trying to convince Sisko to let him get out of flying Bashir to Bajor on a runabout. And Sisko is having none of it. So O'Brien, who is rightfully at this point in his life super creeped out by Bashir, gets stuck basically Ubering him to the planet.
I thought we might have gotten another glimpse of Lieutenant Toast.
Lieutenant George Primman, Starfleet Security.
Yeah,
because O'Brien's like, look, we got more than six Federation people on the station, right? And then it's just crickets. He's like, no, just me. I'm the only one that can drive this runabout.
Yeah, they're really short-staffed right now. I mean, they were short-staffed in the last episode, too. Like, the rescue operation for the most important person on Bajor involved two Starfleet officers and nobody else, as far as we could tell.
They sent their best, too.
They sure did.
At least they did that.
Major Kira and Commander Sisko head down to greet the leader of the Paku, and the door opens and a gray-haired old man steps forward, but then steps aside, and in his place steps a young woman. So I guess here in the 24th century, young women are being allowed to have political power. The devil, you say?
You're not even old enough to drive.
She's Varys Sewell, the Tetrarch of the Paku.
Of course she is, Ben.
What's a Tetrarch?
I mean, contextually, she's like the mayor, or yeah, whatever. She was given the mayorship after her dad died. I guess that's how the mayorships work. He vacated his seat. She crawled up into it and has been there at a very young age.
Yeah, like a surprising kind of political leader for the Bajorans to have, given the fact that they're being considered for entry into the Federation. Like, are we really doing seats of power passed down from one member of a family to another, or like, wouldn't you have to be like a pretty democratic society to get into the Federation?
Bajor really seems like, it seems contemporarily a lot like Earth, in which there are just so many little areas, like outlier areas, that have their own weird version of government,
yeah,
and their own weird rule of law.
In many ways, this is an exploration of the primitive parts of the Bajoran culture.
Yeah.
In other ways, it's just a fucking bag full of clown shoes.
You're going to need a pretty big bag to hold all those clown shoes, Ben. Because clown shoes are very large.
Bashir and O'Brien pile into a Winnebago and are heading to Bajor. And we get an extended scene about how awkward it is between them. Like, Bashir is trying to, he's doing all the work in a conversation, and O'Brien is just like, I don't want to talk to you, bro. I don't want to be here. I don't want to be around you. And if you ask me what I'm thinking about, I'm going to tell you the most boring thing I can think of on the spot.
I thought a lot during this scene about, you know, it's just after the holidays, Ben, and I think one of the movies that I watch most often during the last month is Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, which is like a great exploration into the politics of an unwilling road trip.
I was having a perfectly nice trip until you walked into my life.
You know, like between two different people.
Yeah.
And it's weird, like, how caustic and broad And occasionally not broad at all. Candy and Martin play their characters, and how narrowly Bashir and O'Brien act out their own animus for each other. You know, like, we don't really get open war with them in a way that I think would be way more interesting. Like, it's almost as if they're obeying the Gene Roddenberry precept about, like, not having conflict between Federation people. Like, it would be okay if they were openly hostile with each other, but they don't even come close to that.
The thing is, we've just spent the last 2 hours alone together in this runabout, and you've hardly said a word to me the whole time.
Really?
I hadn't noticed.
Well, I think Bashir isn't even, like, really picking up on what's going on. Like,
There's an obliviousness to Bashir that sort of, like, it unlocks the whole thing for him, for his character, for me in this scene, which is, like, right. he doesn't grasp his own power. Because for him, who outranks O'Brien, to ask him a question like, do I annoy you, is wildly inappropriate, because he doesn't understand that a subordinate could never answer that question honestly.
Yeah, it's how do I answer this in a way that is honest and or not insulting? Like, when my parents were visiting recently, and when they were leaving, my mom was like, "Hey, I bet you're glad to have us out of your hair, huh?" And I was like, "Don't, like, never even set that up as a premise in a conversation, because you're not going to like the answer, and it just puts me in a really awkward position."
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the way this is done right is when you're Jellicoe. Jellicoe did it right. He was like, "Let's just drop the ranks. I think you're a son of a bitch." Like, that's how you do it. Bashir never drops rank, and that's the main problem.
Yep. So they get to this town, and I guess the mission that they've been told is that this town is being threatened with total destruction, and that's kind of all they know, but they know it's like a medical thing. So I guess they're assuming that this is some kind of, like, outbreak hot zone. Like, maybe they go in like hazmat suits. That'd be cool.
They just drop a daisy cutter from the runabout. Problem solved.
Episode over.
Boy, we haven't had a cut to end music in a long time, Ben.
Yeah.
That felt good.
It's good to play the hits every so often.
Yeah.
It's an oldie but a goodie.
They're like, "Guys, you got to meet this old man. This old man's job the entire time has been saving us from destruction every year on the day. This thing comes at us, threatens to kill us, and this old man saves us. It's a good deal for us, except he's sick."
Have you guys ever read the children's book Abby Yo-Yo?
The old people used to tell stories about the giants that lived in the old days.
I mean, like, our whole village is kind of like that in a lot of ways. Anyways, let us introduce you.
Here's the crazy thing about this. We've never called for help about this problem before.
Nobody from outside of this little tiny village knows about this crazy thing that happens here. No science has ever been done on this situation.
And so Bashir and O'Brien are introduced to this old man, this old bedridden man, whose name is Sirrah. Known for being a little more bland than a Cabernet bin.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of a good braising wine, I'd say.
A little spicier and less fruity than a Pinot.
Yeah, you don't want to pair that with big spicy red meat. You want to dial that back.
Yeah, and this dude is clinging to death, and he's like, where is the person that the prophets have sent me? And he looks at Bashir's skin on his hand and is like, "Nope, too dark. Get me the white." And they bring O'Brien over and he looks at him and he's like, "Yeah, you'll do." One of the most openly racist things that I've ever seen in Star Trek. Like, since Code of Honor, this is just like, holy shit. Like, there's a guy standing there in lederhosen to, like, fully cement how racist this situation is. What the hell?
He's totally, like, he's totally peak old. He's laid up in a Craftmatic adjustable. He's watching nothing but headline news morning, noon, and night. And he's like, nope, this guy's an Arab. The thing is, he's got a handler, right? This old guy, Sarah, has got like, who...
He's got a petite Sarah, if you will.
He's got a successor who's sort of like hanging out in the periphery.
This guy kind of looks like if Fred Armisen and Rob Schneider had a child together. That's what this guy looks like.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
He's the one hanging out in the lederhosen, Adam.
O'Brien doesn't really take this too seriously. He's like, sure, whatever, old man. Like, whatever, you racist son of a bitch. Like, we're not going to be here long enough to do anything about your problem anyway. Like, you're talking about these sky monsters, like, raining hellfire down on you. Like, I'd like to see that.
Yeah.
Like, they sort of write him off as a kook.
Yeah. I mean, and the old man, like, very convincingly plays the role that he has here as, like, you know, he like has the crazy eyes and like is saying things that they don't understand, but then, you know, the second you put a wooden stick in his hand and put him on top of a craggly rock while a storm is raging around him, it's like, whoa.
he plays big really well.
Yeah.
And it's because he was the Scytherian in TNG, Ben. You remember that guy?
Oh, shit.
When they took the ship way out there, like way
out
there. Like, whoa. He was the guy that popped up on the bridge, the
big
head guy.
Was it the traveler that took them there? Was that how that went?
Yeah.
Or did the Scytherian bring them there with Barclay? Is that what that episode is?
Oh, man. They're all just sort of these Scytherian storylines just a spray in my mind.
Yeah, it's blurring together. I'm losing focus. Well, back on Derp Space Nern, the talks, like Sisko's idea is like, we're going to get these talks started in kind of an informal way. We'll just have a hang like this morning before like the formal peace conference starts later today. And so he gets the Tetrarch and her counterpart from, what are they called? The Navat? Yeah. And they get together and the Navat guy is like a grumpy old middle-aged man. Like, you know, looks like a guy that you have to work for at your first job, who's really pissed off that he's not higher up in the company.
Who just loves bossing around 15-year-olds.
Yeah. And
which is sort of great casting, because that's what he gets to do.
Yep. The center of the dispute that these two people have is that they have like an ancient peace treaty that establishes that some river is the dividing line between their territories, but oblivious to this treaty, the Cardassians, when they controlled Bajor, diverted the river to, you know, do some irrigation project or whatever. And so because of that, the Paku wound up with a whole bunch more land than they were, you know, than the spirit of the treaty meant for them to have. But the letter of the treaty defends their point. So, you know, that's why they are in such disagreement.
Pretty low stakes.
Yeah. It's low stakes, but like the implication is that they could go to war over this, right? Like
it's 20 kilometers of land.
Yeah.
That's the dispute.
I mean, I'm an ignorant American. I don't really have a great sense of what 20 kilometers of land means.
I have no idea. That could be my backyard for all I know.
Is that 20 square kilometers or 20... Did the river move over 20 kilometers? Is it like thousands of square kilometers? Because they, like, hundreds of miles of the river moved over several miles?
Is it like a Kessel Run to Parsecs equation situation? I don't think we can fully understand this.
Yeah.
We're not supposed to.
No, yeah, it's really, like, the terms of the dispute are established and then quickly, like, forgotten about, because what this girl is really here to do is be the object of affection for Nog. Jake and Nog are like up to no good hanging around on the promenade, and
they finally pay off the rich tapestry of storytelling of Jake and Nog looking at Bajoran girls when this perfect Bajoran girl appears.
Yeah. Got real nice hair, Adam. I see what they see in her.
She's real pretty, and she's real smart, and she's powerful.
Yeah, I don't think that they ever quite figure out that she is powerful.
They treat her like a contemporary. They treat her like a kid.
Yeah, and that's got to, like you can see her really appreciating that in scenes. Like, she talks a lot of shit later in the episode to Sisko about, like, oh, I was just using them to, like, learn about you. But, like, really, I think, you know, heavy lies the crown, and she was kind of happy to have some knuckleheads to divert her attention while she's in the midst of this stressful-ass conference.
Ben, one way in which my attention was diverted was, I guess I'm just going to come out and say it, Ben. There is a problem with Jake Sisko, W/R/T, Nuck. And I think we just need to put it out there. It's almost because of the actor's age, Nuck, which should not be mentioned.
Right.
Like, Nuck, which should go unregarded, but for the idea that his Nuck is front and center in basically every scene.
They really
he has more costume changes than anyone else on the show. He has 8 onesies, none of which have belts. All of them have like empire waists and are like Nuck form fitting.
You got to put the kid in some longer shirts that cover up the Nuck.
Ben, I don't understand it. Why are they doing this to him?
I don't know. I mean, like, they have kind of an established look for kids that they are inheriting from TNG, which is everybody is basically in, like, space pajamas.
Give the kid a codpiece, though. You know?
Yeah, so that he looks more like, you know, like a superhero or something.
I mean, it'd be less weird than what we're getting.
Yeah. Like,
it's not flattering.
Nog at least gets to wear like pantaloons and blouses so that, you know, he doesn't have like undue Nuck.
It's a troubling amount of Nuck, Ben.
Yeah, it's a troubling amount of Nuck, and it's like, I don't understand, like, the thing that really
How could no one else see this? Like, we're not the only ones to see this. They're actually, wardrobe is designing a costume.
Yeah.
And they know what this looks like.
When you go in for a fitting, you like stand in front of a mirror. You often like take
maybe
pictures in a bunch
mirrors.
Of different looks. And then like the director signs off on one. What the fuck? Like, how do they not go like, oh, well, his dork is poking out in a distracting way in the middle there. So not this one.
That seems like an easy call. That's an easy call to make. It's red pen X over the Nuck.
No.
And not gonna go with that one.
Keep squiggling.
Naughty jungle of love.
The explanation that makes sense is that they took measurements of the actor who plays Jake. They took measurements of Sirach Lofton, and they pre-made all the uniforms, and then it was just too late. Like, like it's a sunk cost fallacy. Like, it's. They're already pot committed to that Nuck, Ben.
Yeah, they're. Yeah, you don't want to throw good Nuck money after bad.
It. I mean, and this is SD.
Yeah,
they're lighting this in profile. They're pronouncing the Nuck.
Here's the conspiracy theory, Adam. They've said that not enough people bought the Blu-ray edition of TNG, so that's why no DS9 HD remaster. What our theory presupposes is maybe they're conscious of the fact that they might all be sent to jail for the Nuck situation when a higher resolution is brought to light on the character of Jake Sisko.
Hey, costume designers, why don't you take a seat over there?
And what's going on here seems pretty pervy, doesn't it?
Why did you show up to work today with a six-pack of Bacardi Breezers and a pizza from Round Table? What is that about?
I feel like we had to talk about it. Like, it's the Nuck in the room, Ben. We had to talk about it, and hopefully we will just never talk about it again. It's been referred to. It's in the log.
Yeah. I mean,
Nuck, which should not be mentioned ever.
I will
again.
Fucking guarantee you that we will get some concern trolling for the fact that we discussed it.
I always do.
Always do. Hey, listen, I know you guys are normally like really cool on these issues, but
what's the other thing that we get? It's not concern trolling. It's almost the exact opposite.
People say that we're doing too much virtue signaling.
Oh, no, they say you do too much virtue signaling, Ben. No one ever makes that accusation of me, which in a weird way, like, makes me feel bad, like as if I'm less virtuous than you or willing
to
be virtuous.
I listen back
to
these things, and I'm like, what the fuck are they talking about? Adam's on my side on this.
Sure. I'm just not sending out those signals, Ben.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on.
We're doing some heavy nuck signaling. That's what we're doing in this episode. Here's what I'm doing, Ben. I'm touching all the titles. I'm licking them all.
Lick those titles, Adam.
What are you drinking, buddy?
I just finished. I went down to the nerdy beer store in my neighborhood. I just finished one called the Noble Aleworks Fun Light, which is a light beer from a nerdy beer producer. And now I'm going to be drinking a Colette Farmhouse Ale from Great Divide Brewery in Denver, Colorado.
Nice. Oh, like a Denver beer.
Yeah.
I'm drinking a beer from The Alchemist in Vermont, known to be some very great beers. We brought them back from Vermont when my wife and I attended friend of the pod Grant's wedding over there.
Hey.
Ben, have you ever brought beer home from a trip and then had the beer explode in a in a checked bag? Because that's what happened to us. That wasn't fun.
Yeah, I really just never put anything explosive in a checked bag.
I'm drinking one of the two farmer's daughters that we brought back. The other farmer's daughter done exploded.
Yeah, it's like that classic joke where the traveling salesman has to spend the night in the barn, and the farmer says, "Don't explode my daughters," is the only rule.
Such a classic.
Yeah.
To be quite honest about it, I was in a pail. Mr. Bucket, I have to revert back to my little state. I don't use the bucket anymore.
Bashir and O'Brien are down on this planet, and a storm kicks up.
We are ready!
This is the visit of the Dalrock that happens for five consecutive nights once a year in this village. And they help this racist old coot down from his deathbed to hobble out to the like promontory in the middle of town, and like Moses in a Bible picture from the 30s, he stands up there with the wind whipping around and the bad green screen key on the potted plants behind him.
Could it be some kind of holographic image?
Nah, I'm not picking up any power source.
The sky overhead is this big milky blob, which is like not really what they described. They said that there was a monster that lived in the woods and it would come out of the woods and kill people or whatever. And
yeah,
instead,
not
it's
the
like,
same.
It's like space being that looks like milk and oil or something.
It's sub-Nagilum level effects work here.
Yeah, and the effects work is not going to get better over the course of the scene. It's going to get worse because he whips the people into a frenzy like 1984, you know, the hate at noon, and they're like beaming like rays of love out of their noggins at this cloud, and it's like receding into the sky, and then old man catches a heart attack. He goes down, and the cloud goes back to full strength and starts taking pot shots at things. And you know, it's like it's shooting beams of light into the village and actually causing some destruction.
Bloody hell!
The stakes seem existential, like, and yet I never felt like they were in any danger.
Yeah,
you know, like. If this thing had the power to kill them all, Again, like, this is the backup problem that this show frequently runs into. Like, Bashir and O'Brien should do the responsible thing and call for backup, but they never do. This is a crystalline entity level threat.
Right.
I guess they're looking at this old guy and they're like, well, if this guy can fight him off, like, we should be all right.
Yeah, one thing that's pretty funny that the one of the townspeople says is, like, he's the only one strong enough to fight the thing off, and they just take that, they just take his word for it. Like, so you're all weaker than this man who's, like, dying on this bed?
Which makes the idea of old man Merlot bequeathing this task to O'Brien, like, sort of medium insulting.
Yeah.
He's like, you look like a guy who doesn't want to go home. Why don't you stay here and fight off this lava lamp?
Yeah. But they help the old man up, and he gets people back whipped into a frenzy, and they're like, fuck you, Cloud. Fuck you. And
the old man yells at Cloud.
and the rainbow glitter light kills the cloud, and they all cheer, and amidst their reverie, the old man bails out once more, and Dr. Bashir declares him dead on the spot.
He kind of eats shit on the side of this mountain. It doesn't look like a stuntman. Like, if it's the old man doing a practical fall, it looks somewhat painful.
Yeah, he goes down pretty hard.
Good thing he's wearing all those blankets.
Yeah. And the guy that is, like, I guess the mayor of the village or something is like, well, don't worry, everybody, because while this guy died, he left us a successor. And here he is, Chief O'Brien. O'Brien is like one finger down the collar of his shirt, like,
oh, I'm gonna dread calling home at the end of this work day.
Yeah.
Miles, why aren't you home yet? Well, these people turn me into their god.
That is god now.
So back on the station, on what is really our A story, a plan is hatched. A plan between
this
Nog.
Is like the most insane pairing of two stories to be told in parallel, yeah. By the way. Like, if you're telling two stories in parallel, usually, like, you kind of try and make them, like, be thematically related and have interesting valences and things to say about each other. Not this episode.
It's like the A story looks at the B story and is like, hold my beer, we can be less important than that. Jake and Nog see Verisul, like, in their old balcony spot, you know, kicking her legs over the side, being all sad teenager about things.
They're like, hey, if it was anything but a pretty girl, we'd be pissed that she's in our spot, but this is great.
Right. Nog is like, hey, you want to have a little fun? I got a great idea. Let's go steal Odo's bucket.
Mr. Bucket?
This might be the only thing that is redeeming this episode, is that this is a great prank.
Complete disagreement. Verisul has no idea of Odo's bucket significance, doesn't know Odo, doesn't even know Jake and Nog, and yet she's like, yeah, I'm super bored about being on the precipice of war. I'm going to go do this prank with these two strangers. So, because
Adam,
Nog,
are you telling me that you're not familiar with the phenomenon of adolescent boys trying to impress girls by doing things that they don't realize are going to be insanely off-putting to girls?
Oh, yeah. I am become that.
All your Nog are belong to us.
Nog stole one of the honey sticks out of Quark's bar that allows him to open up any door in the station. Sneaks in there and grabs Odo's bucket and does, like, a little bit of physical comedy.
He, like,
does the trip and fall and spills what he says to be Odo's liquid body all over Jake.
Oh! Odo!
A liquid body which has taken the form of wet oatmeal.
It's oatmeal! I filled it from the rep
replicator.
My wife was eating oatmeal this morning and said, I really missed oatmeal. And I said, that is not a sentiment I will ever express.
I missed you, oatmeal. I missed you so much.
Would you put oatmeal in my bucket? It puts the oatmeal in the bucket. It puts the oatmeal in the bucket whenever it is told.
Jake rubs the oatmeal on his skin. Or else he gets even more oatmeal again. He is positively covered in this oatmeal bin.
Yeah.
One of the 8 Jake jumpsuits that he's been issued. Probably this one's probably going to get thrown in the dumpster.
Yeah. I feel like he had like a different jumpsuit when they hatched the plan, too. Like, yeah, I'm looking at it now. He's in a purple jumpsuit when they hatch the prank plan, and then when they do the prank, he's in a green jumpsuit. So he was like,
so there you
cool
go,
idea, Nog. I'm going to head to my room and just do a quick wardrobe change, but I'll meet up with you guys at the security office.
All you viewers who write in saying we don't care about this show, we don't pay attention, that's some hardcore knowledge right there. Different jumpsuits.
Yeah.
Jumpsuit gate. Laid bare.
Jumpsuit Gate 2018. They're laughing about this, and you know, Nog reveals that he just filled the bucket up in the replicator. And then
how does Nog know what oatmeal is? Also, like, he should have no idea what oatmeal is.
Yeah. That would be a fun little, like, I would love to discover that there was a deleted scene of Nog like consulting with the computer. Like, what's a viscous substance that I can get a bunch of?
That's a great idea. What would you... Hey, Ben.
Yeah.
What would you have filled the bucket up with? You're at the replicator. You have 5 seconds to make a decision. What's it
going
to be?
I'm going with honey, because, I mean, like, that's what Odo looks like when he's melty.
I am going with blood in sort of a carry scene, right? I'm gonna do a carry callback. Fill that bucket with blood.
Oh yeah, when Odo is in his bucket, he's blood.
Was there blood in the bucket before?
It is a blood bucket, so yeah, there was old blood.
I mean, there's a subtext to Jake and Nog's friendship here, which is sort of like they're sort of in competition for Verisul's affection.
Yeah,
and Nog is sort of like, this whole pratfall is an attempt to ugly up Jake in a way that makes him unattractive. Mm-hmm. What's more ugly than blood? You cover Jake with that blood, I think the battle's won.
Yeah.
For Team Nog.
Yeah, and also it would be harder for Jake to get a handful of the blood and throw it back, which he does with the oatmeal.
Like, if you were a set dresser, this is like your nightmare, right? You've got 2 child actors throwing oatmeal around your set. Like, just out of frame, you know there's a bunch of Visqueen on the carpet, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Golden carpet. The carpet. Golden carpet.
So, I think this is a great prank, because Nog leads Jake and Varys to believe that this is going to be a prank on Odo, when in fact it is a prank on Jake. And the prank goes great.
Jake Nog's a dick, though, right? Any prank that results in a clothing change, I think that's a dick prank.
I think when your best friend is Jake Sisko, guy who changes outfits in between ideas, like that's not that big of a problem for him. Oh, this? I have 20 more of them back in my quarters. They all show the same amount of nuck.
Yeah.
Ugh. But Nog gets caught orange-handed by Commander Sisko as he attempts to flee the scene, and Odo and Sisko like kind of converge on the security office, and it's pretty clear that they're all in a heap of trouble.
Less so for Verisul, I think. She's a diplomat, and she's not from the station. Like, yeah. If anyone's going to get away scot-free, it's going to be her.
Yeah. Well, back on the surface of planet Bajor in the most isolated town of all time, Chief O'Brien, newly minted Sirrah of town, is getting, like, gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh brought to him. And if that wasn't enough, they also bring him the three town prostitutes, apparently. And he has to explain, like, oh, yeah, no, I'm a married man. And they're like, oh, get out of here, hookers. Do you want us to, like, call your wife and get her down here? Because you're going to be living here forever now.
He's like, no, God, please do not call her. He begins sort of apologetically, like, it pains me to say this, but I do have a wife. there is nothing more that I'd like than to start over with your harem. But... Get a fresh start. That's what I'd like to do.
These girls all look like people that Nog and Jake would subject to the male gaze as they attempted to walk around in public on Deep Space Nine, and for that they should be applauded.
Way to keep it classy, O'Brien. Bashir, sort of like angel and devil on O'Brien's shoulders, is like, don't you understand? These girls are for you, man. And if you don't want to take them, I'm second in line.
Yeah, and O'Brien is like, well, Julian, like, your creepiness is well known to everybody, but I'm not quite sure that's how it works.
Your creepiness is legendary.
So they got, like, a little bit of a mystery here. They're like, okay, we were rolling tricorders the entire time that crazy cloud came out last night, and we were getting nothing. Like, no evidence of an atmospheric disturbance, like... The cloud itself didn't show up on our sensors, and yet it was like it was licking shots in the atmosphere and, like, you know, taking chunks out of buildings and stuff. So something happened. So there must be something up here, and they're trying to, like, look into it. And O'Brien is like,
"Hey Ben, do you think we'll ever find out what's up?"
O'Brien is like tearing the Sirrah's apartment apart, trying to find the crap that is causing this. And Petite Sirrah sneaks in and is like, "Hey man, sorry, I got to do this, but you're not the rightful Sirrah. I am." And he whips out a knife, and they're having, like, a struggle where he's attempting to knife Chief O'Brien to death, and Julian Bashir enters and manages to wrest the knife out of the guy's hand. And they're like, instead of just arresting him and putting him away for the attempted murder of an off-world military officer, they're like, "Why did you try to kill me?"
In case you had any question about the level of indignity that O'Brien's willing to brook from anyone, this guy tried to kill him, and he continues to walk the street a free man.
Yeah. But so what he reveals is that the Dalrock is not so much a real monster as a fictional device that was invented by one of his predecessors, the first Sirrah. This town was full of assholes who, I guess, wanted to kill each other, and he united them around a common enemy in the Dalrock by using a fragment of a prophet orb, which is taken the form of a jewel in a bracelet. And by focusing the power of this jewel, he, like, created this enemy and then got them all to commonly hate this enemy. And, you know, used a classic populist political ploy coupled with prophet magic to get this town working together.
Prophet magic sounds like a certain tax plan we know, Ben.
Something D-O-O economics. Voodoo economics.
Letters. We get letters. We get letters every goddamn week.
And so this is where this episode really kind of betrays the values of Trek to me, because
this is the part
the well, like, it's a bad episode, but that's not alien to Trek. What is alien to Trek is going like, oh, you used lies and illusions and risk people's lives with like alien technology you're not fully in control of in order to like enforce a political reality. Like, we'll do everything in our power to help you continue this project. Like, that is insane.
Yeah, they shouldn't do that, especially because this thing is dangerous, right? Like, it hurts people every year. It's knocking people off mountains. It's killing old people.
Yeah.
Like this is a real threat that they've conjured.
And instead, like in a universe where Captain Picard is like unwilling to like plant ideas with the Mentakans of his deity so that they can like cover up the fact that Starfleet was there spying on them. In this episode, O'Brien like puts on a dashiki and goes out there and attempts to be for these people what the Sarah was.
Chief O'Brien. Occasionally I will go up into the atmosphere of my planet. It's the only place that I have total privacy to jerk off. Occasionally, I will...
As a dowd, I produce a volume of ejecta that is probably quite alarming to you as a human being.
On one of my more recent enjoyments of my own body... I managed to steer my Daudism towards Bajor, where it manifests itself on the mountaintop, where you currently reside. Most are powerless to stop it. Rashan was unable to have children, therefore, her womb was the only thing able to stop my fierce jism. Perhaps your dashiki has a Rashan womb level defense mechanism that can save your damaged people.
While O'Brien is badly...
Kevin's trying to make space babies, like in 2001, right? What if he's just shooting it all around, Ben?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm trying to spread my seed far and wide. This is a part of my life where I've decided to take advantage of the fact that I don't have a monogamous relationship tying me down and sow my wild oats.
It just so happens that my oats are very, very dangerous.
Unlike the oats in the bucket that Nog flung on Jake Sisko in this episode, mine can cause buildings to collapse, can cause women and children to die, and yet they must be sown.
It takes a bucket the size of a cement mixer to contain my oats.
You show me a chief of security that needs a bucket that big, I'll show you somebody that can maybe stand up to a Dowd.
Well,
this episode got a whole lot better once we made it canonical Dowd.
Yeah, yeah. Big improvement. Alamarin, come to Ford. Alamarin, come to Ford. When O'Brien is up there kind of fumbling through his attempt to whip the crowd into the kind of frenzy they need to be in to shoot their rainbow glitter beam at the Dowdjism, Bashir turns to Petite Sarah and is like, hey, I've spent a time or two in a writer's room, and I would say that like the really obvious thing that is going on here is that your failure as a Syrah was a problem, and that the racist old man you're replacing, like, planted this bumbling fool up here so that you could take over for him and prove your worth to these rustics that you're going to be the Syrah for the rest of your career. So why don't you run up there, grab the bracelet, and take over for my buddy, because he is clearly dying on his feet up there. And so up the guy goes. He does a great job, really, really gets the crowd on his side. They start chanting that he is the Syrah and not O'Brien. And O'Brien's like, great, because that was not my bag. Anyways, guys, we're out of here. You can keep the dashiki. Nice meeting all of you. Bye.
What the fuck happened? O'Brien had a nice little adventure.
Yeah, fun little time for O'Brien.
Did you like this episode, Ben?
Well, we got a little button at him.
Oh, I skipped to the end, didn't I?
Yeah. So the whole thing with What's-Her-Face meeting Nog is that she, like, gets some Ferengi wisdom, which is like, oh, you shouldn't be approaching this negotiation as, like, we will not brook any secession of land to our enemies, but instead, like, well, let's use this as leverage and get something from them that we want. Like, we don't care about this land, but, you know, they really do. So, and so it's something trading rights with regard to the river or something. And she, like, expresses some embarrassment for being involved in the bucket caper to Commander Sisko. And she's off. And
there's like an interesting bit of like, because you and I don't care about the decision that she comes to. The episode doesn't care about the decision that she comes to. It's more about like the lesson that the decision teaches.
Right.
Which, like, Sisko's advice to Varisola is like, no is less risky than yes, but like sometimes saying yes is the only way to win anything. So maybe take a risk on yes.
Yeah.
And she's like, I'm going to try that. That's great.
Yeah. So, and then the button on the episode is Bashir and O'Brien, like, getting off, coming out of the airlock, and they're now a lot closer as comrades. You know, they've been through a thing together, and O'Brien is like, hey, man, like, don't spread that crazy story around, because I am not fond of what happened down there.
Do you think he left his dashiki on the runabout?
No, he doesn't even give it to Petit Syrah. He leaves it piled up on the rock. I was like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, the thing to do in that scene is, like, drape the cape around the guy like he's fucking James Brown, because he is.
You've got a Mintaken tapestry, that shit. You got to drape it over your office chair as a reminder of the growth that you went through.
Oh, yeah. That's right? The other thing you could do.
Ben, one thing I noticed in this scene that now I can't unsee is there's a step to the airlock that heads to the runabout.
Yeah.
And that step comes to a point. It is shaped like a triangle, and it comes to a very sharp point that sticks out like 2 feet from the doorway.
Yeah.
That thing is a shin killer, man.
Yeah.
People have got to be getting killed on that thing.
Yeah, that's not that is not OSHA approved. The Cardassians don't have good accessibility built into their designs.
Not at all. Well, the question I couldn't wait to ask you earlier, Ben, was, did you like this episode?
I like talking about it. I liked making fun of it.
this is one of those, isn't it?
Yeah. I think it's a tried and true first season of a Star Trek show situation to be like, oh, like the last episode, we showed you some real potential, and now we are going to squander all of that. Like, it was just such a silly episode. It was so, it was ridiculous. It was like it didn't know what universe it took place in.
It was unintentionally funny, I thought, in a number of parts.
Yeah.
And when it tried to be funny, it wasn't funny to me. Like, the bucket prank, I don't know. Star Trek doesn't do slapstick very well.
Yeah, I guess not.
But unintentionally funny was O'Brien and the Dashiki. That's great.
Yeah. Did you like the episode, Adam?
I like opportunities given to O'Brien to grow the character. Like Fish Out of Water is a fun genre for me. O'Brien is a good personification of that when he's given the opportunity. Colomini, well acted.
Sure.
In that role. Super fun. But like, I wish the part of the episode that I wish was more toothsome was was how argumentative I had hoped Bashir and O'Brien would be on this mission.
Yeah.
But they never were. Yeah, it was mostly like Bashir pointing out things that O'Brien was too dumb to notice.
Right.
And at no point did O'Brien be like, shut the fuck up, Bashir. Like, I know these are concubines. Like, I've seen concubines before. That's basically all I do in the Holo Suites is like piles of concubines.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Like, I want that to either come to it. I want it to come to a head and then like reveal a deeper friendship. But I don't feel like the show's willing to go there at this point.
Well, do you want to check our priority one messages, see if there's anything in there?
I know we got some of that.
Yeah, baby.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone could be enough to buy this ship.
Ben, our first priority one message is from the ghost of Bingo channeled through Kirstar Shrimp Colgar. The message is for Mock and Mike, but mostly Mock.
Hmm.
Message goes like this, and in parentheses it says, in voice of Bob Vila after 20 Bud Lights, please.
That should be no problem for you tonight.
Oh, Mock, I see you getting out of your car there. Let me talk to you for a minute. The neighborhood has gone downhill after you left. After you and the small guy and the other two moved out. It's put me into a deep, dark depression. But since you borrowed my truck that one time, I need you to do me a favor. See, that's not a Bob Vila impression. That's a This Old House impression.
Yeah.
I don't have a Vila. I don't have a Vila in my tool belt.
Yeah, I think this is what they were asking for.
Well, that's what they get.
I think a lot of focus has been put on Raz and Plavim, where Mike Mock and Shrimp Colgar deserve more attention.
I agree. Give me more Mike and Mock.
Yeah.
Give me a little more Gooch, for that matter.
Sure. Well, Gooch is always in the Team Raz P1s, right?
Et tu, Gooch.
You're saying you feel betrayed by Gooch? Because there hasn't been a P1 in like 4 episodes or something?
Here's what I'm going to do. I'm turning to camera right now. I'm looking at you, Gooch. It's time for you to go solo. Anyone known as the Gooch should be sending their own priority one messages. I'm calling you out.
Okay. Fair enough. Adam, our second priority one message for this episode is from Richard, and it's for Yvonne. It goes like this. To she who is my wife, despite your love of sci-fi versus my fantasy, comic books versus computer games, and different star universes, we've managed to coexist without much blood said for many years now. I love you, and I hope you enjoy this late Christmas present. Adam and Ben, thanks for consuming all my wife's attention. Let's eat some Korean barbecue. Hey, I'm always down for some KBBQ.
Hey, anytime you want to invite your favorite podcasters for KBB, throw it out there.
Yeah, we will disabuse you of your Star Wars fandom post-haste.
I will suspend any awkward feelings I have about dining with strangers if it's over the fire of a Korean barbecue, Ben.
Yeah, we picked a venue, though.
Sure. Yeah,
we don't want to show up at like some strip mall Korean barbecue place and find that it's been carefully set decorated to be a trick for killing us.
We have extremely high Korean barbecue standards, you and I, and we are unwilling to lower them.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, if your standards for messaging are as high as ours as high as the standards that Ben and I have for Korean barbecue, you can do no better than sending a priority one message. You can do that by going to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron, where you can, once there, reach the tens of thousands of viewers we have for this show. You have an idea or a message? You want to get out to that many people? That's where you do it. Personal messages are $100. Commercial messages are $200. And they're one of the great ways to support the ongoing production of the show, Ben.
Sure is.
Yarmouk and Jalad at Tanagra.
Hello, teachers and faculty. This is Janet Varney. I'm here to remind you that listening to my podcast, The JV Club with Janet Varney, is part of the curriculum for the school year. Learning about the teenage years of such guests as Allison Brie, Vicki Peterson, John Hodgman, and so many more is a valuable and enriching experience. One you have no choice but to embrace, because yes, listening is mandatory. The JV Club with Janet Varney is available every Thursday on Maximum Fun or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you. And remember, no running in the halls.
If you need a laugh and you're on the go, try STOPPODCASTI.
Oh, you're trying to put the name of the podcast there?
Yeah, I'm trying to spell it, but it's tricky.
Let me give it a try.
Okay.
If you need a laugh and you're on the go, call STOPPAD. It'll never fit.
No, it will. Let me try. If you need a laugh and you're on the go, try STOPPDCOO. We are so close.
Stop podcasting yourself.
A podcast from MaximumFun.org.
If you need a laugh and you're on the go.
Hey, Adam.
What's that, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible.
Drunk Shimoda!
I did find a drunk Shimoda, Ben. My drunk Shimoda is Dr. Julian Bashir, who is sort of supposed to be instrumental to this mission. Like, O'Brien's supposed to be the fucking driver.
Yeah.
Like, he's the Uber driver. Bashir's supposed to be doing all the heavy lifting. It takes 5 minutes of being on the planet's surface for Bashir to just basically be quip guy. like, not going to save this old man's life. There's no medicine for me to do out here. I am just going to make fun of Chief O'Brien, a guy who I'm fairly certain hates me, but I'm going to make fun of him anyway.
Yeah.
Like, how far would he allow things to go for his amusement was a thought that I had while watching this episode. Because, like, O'Brien's in real danger multiple times. Like, he saved him from being stabbed by Petite Sirah. But, like, at every other point, he does nothing to disabuse the Bajorans from the idea that he's their new deity.
Right.
He really, like, he sort of lays back in the cut and gives Petite Sirah the idea about, like, the preordained plan for him from the start.
Right.
But, like, he's watching O'Brien and laughing for 35 minutes of this episode. Like, laughing at him, not with him.
Yeah, yeah.
It made me wonder, is Bashir a sociopath? Because the whole reason he gives Petite Sirah the idea to save the day, but he only does so when his own life is in danger, I feel like. And if that wasn't the case, I think he's willing to see this thing through to the end.
I feel like if we were watching an episode of, like, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, they would have come up with the idea of faking everybody out so that one of them could look like they saved the day.
Right.
Like, ahead of time, you know? And then it would have gone bad because Danny DeVito, like, busted in wine drunk and ruined the whole thing or whatever. But yeah, like, the construction of the story is so... It's so weirdly predictable that Bashir, like, laying back and just watching it all and cracking wise about it the entire time is a little bit suspicious.
He's totally the Mac of the show because, like, he doesn't scream at people.
Yeah.
He kind of lays back in the cut and is very condescending. That's Bashir.
Yeah.
Bashir is the Mac of the show.
Yeah. Yeah, I think O'Brien in this metaphor is the Charlie, I guess.
Yeah, I can see that.
He's just the janitor that always killing rats and taking out garbage.
How about you, Ben?
I'm giving it to Petite Sirah. This is another of our famous timestamp Shimodas. If you go to 26 minutes and 26 seconds, this is just after the mayor guy has they're like, well, we got to go. And he's like, no, like, O'Brien, you live here now. You're the Sirah. And he's like, well, I don't know anything about being a religious leader. And he's like, well, you just have to tell the story. Like, that's all there is to it. You just tell the story and it saves the town every single time. That's how it works. And he's like, that's all there is to it. And he's like, kind of like ultimately satisfied by that. And so the mayor leaves and Petite Sirah is like standing by the door. And as he walks out, he does that thing of like maintaining eye contact all the way off the edge of the frame, which is like the most threatening shit. And like the only thing that could have made it better if he had gone out of frame and then come back in, still maintaining eye contact.
No one has ever left a room maintaining eye contact and then not attempted to kill you later.
No, yeah. Like
that's a thing.
That is, that's like the coughing up blood of I'm going to kill you later.
Right. Oh, man, that's a great Shimoda. What do we have coming up on the next episode, Ben?
The next episode is season 1, episode 14, Progress. A stubborn old Bajoran farmer forces Kira to take a good look at how much she has changed since her alliance with the Federation.
You've changed, man. I don't even recognize you anymore.
It's a really scintillating topic for an episode.
Can't wait.
Do you want to find out if we'll be drunk for this one, Adam?
I want to be drunk for this one. Feels like a good one to be drunk. Roll them bones, Ben.
And we got a one, Adam.
Hell yeah!
Drink is the antidote!
This is actually kind of a problem because we often record two at a time. And that'll be the first of two. So that could really, really pose a problem for us. But that's going to be a drunk episode.
Ben, that's value for the listener. That's what I think. Two for the price of one.
Oh, man.
Very exciting.
Indeed. All right. Well, that'll be next week. In the meantime, why don't you hit us up on social media? There's a great subreddit for Greatest Gen. There's also a Facebook group that's equally great. They are both kicking ass in the number of active members count, like 2,000-3,000 members each. Big time, fun times over there. And we're also using the hashtag Greatest Gen on Twitter, where Adam is at Cut for Time and I'm at Benjamin R. AHR.
Hey, listen, it's the new year. I'm going to the gym again like never before.
I'm getting back into yoga.
One of the things that feels good when you go back to the gym is a new workout shirt. I got to tell you, we got some great workout shirts for you at the Max Fun store. Why don't you head over there and get yourself something fun to work out in? We got a Drunk Shimoda shirt. Yeah, West Hot American Summer shirt.
Get yourself one of those shirts and then, like Mac, cut the sleeves off of it. Show off them guns.
They aren't those scratchy shirts either. Like, they're soft. They're good to do yoga in.
They are well produced.
Send us sweaty workout pics on the Twitter. Share those gym pics. Hashtag Jim Shimoda, G-Y-M Shimoda, on those pics. Let's get this viewership in shape again. I think that's a great goal. Yeah. Let's do it.
Let's be the fittest Star Trek fan community there is, you know?
That's what I'm into. Jim Shimoda. I came up with that on the spot, Ben.
That was a pretty hot move when you came up with Jim Shimoda, G-Y-M.
You know what we gotta do? Here's the thing. If there's enough interest in this, we're going to make another Jim Shimoda shirt, Ben.
A limited edition tank top.
Yeah, exactly the same image as the previous Jim Shimoda shirt, except he's wearing a sweatband. Sweatband tank top Jim Shimoda. get it.
All right. Let us know using the hashtag Jim Shimoda if you want us to make that shirt. We should thank Dark Materia for our theme music and Adam Ragusea for also our theme music. And with that, Adam.
We'll be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine. And another episode of The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine that gets a little saucy.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.